We've all heard the phrase, that kind of thing doesn't happen in our town. But here on Midwest Murder, we will shatter that false reality. In fact, it happens more often than we know. And sometimes, the details of the most horrific crimes that happen in our neighborhoods are lost in the back pages of newspapers, forgotten on our news channels, and eventually erased over time. We're here to talk about murder, diving into some of the most controversial cases in Midwest history. This show will not shy away from the morbid details of these horrific events and the often ugly truths behind them. What you will hear is a detailed timeline of events, perspectives from those closely involved, and analysis by experts. What you will feel is the darkness that surrounds each story, the innocence lost by the victims, and hopefully, the justice that was ultimately delivered.
Don Palumbo.
Jonah Lanto.
You made it through that one without getting breathless. Nice work.
I just took a really deep breath now.
Yeah. You're well-trained and practiced at this point.
I'm well-practiced, yeah. Because I get out of breath all the time.
Yeah, me too.
All right, well, a big thanks to those of you who are, of course, listening in your cars, wherever you take us, on vacations. It's so much fun to hear about that. And, of course, to those joining us in Tioga, North Dakota tonight, what an incredible crowd. This is awesome. So
yeah,
good to
go.
See you guys.
Let's go,
and,
Tioga.
Yeah, and this is cool. Yeah, give yourselves a round of applause.
Thank you.
And of course, a big thanks to everyone who has rated and reviewed the podcast. By just saying one simple tiny word, that does huge things for us. It helps us climb the charts. We have been in, you know, the top 100 of trending, and like right up there with Morbid and Dateline and those types of things. So this is what does that, and we appreciate that. So we're grateful for the comments, the good and the bad, of course, the feedback, support that we receive from our listeners. We truly, truly appreciate it. So, Jonah, what are people saying about Midwest Murder?
Yeah, good or bad. We appreciate it when you jump on iTunes and leave us a review. It helps folks out a lot. And look, we'll read them. 1 star to 5 stars. We're here to tell you about them. This one comes from Midwest Murder Fanatic, Bingeworthy, 5 stars. I was told about this podcast 2 months ago. And yesterday, I finished all 76 episodes. Yes, in 2 months, I binged the entire series. I was strictly a, quote, insert other podcast that I won't name listener, but I love this one so much, I had to become a subscriber. Don and Jonah have an amazing ability to pull you in to the story, but also insert levity when needed. Thank you. Well, thank you, Midwest Murder Fanatic, for taking a little bit of time out of your busy life to give us a review on iTunes. And this one is from Alchemist Piercer. You got me. I've always been anti-podcast. I was positive nothing could keep my attention in the car until I came across Midwest Murder. Here I am, 3 seasons deep, and I cannot get enough. I take long road trips with my sister often, and we always make sure to catch up on your newest episode. It's a great bonding experience. P.S. We hope to see you at a live show next time you're in Bismarck. Well, Alchemist Piercer, you're in luck. We will be in Bismarck at a, as of yet, unannounced show in April, but we hope to see you there. Give us come say hi if you come.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Thanks for that. Thanks for that awesome review.
I was just tagging on one of the posts on Instagram that we're at the Tioga Community Center. I was so excited and so excited that I was efficient that I forgot to tag them. So I was paying attention. Yeah.
Nice work.
Thanks. All right. Merch, be sure to check it out. We've got some here with us tonight. And we've also, of course, you can check us online as well. We've added a few new designs and products, including some joggers. And to order, just check out our socials for a link or go to TOOManyShirts.com/Midwest-Murder.
I was kind of thinking now that we have joggers available, at some point we got to have a pajama party.
Yeah.
Sweats and jammies.
Yeah.
Sweats and jammies show.
I'm not against that.
No,
I'm not against that.
Think about it.
I wouldn't say pajama party, but like just to, you know, show up in your best sweats. Yeah. Extra points if you're in Midwest Murder ones. We've also launched what some would call a fan club, but we call it Club Midwest. Signing up to be one of our Midwesty besties for $10 a month gets you access to some exclusive interactions between us and, of course, our fans, and then episodes up to 7 days earlier than the release date, and an entry into our monthly merch giveaway. We have been blown away by the support with that, and it poked some holes into what we thought would maybe work. And so I think we figured it out now, and we absolutely appreciate all of that and the support that has come along with that.
Yeah, little bump in the road, but we made it.
Yeah, it's... It was a humbling moment, for sure. And of course, this show is brought to you by Midwest Memoirs. Have you ever wondered how the stories of the people you love most will live on after they're gone? Midwest Memoirs is here to help you capture the most precious memories of your loved ones as told in their voice. This is done with research of your family member and completed through a professionally guided interview in a comfortable studio setting using state-of-the-art recording equipment. The most important stories we'll ever hear are those of the people we love most. Contact Midwest Memoirs today on Facebook or Instagram. And it's incredible to see how much that has grown as well. We have communities contacting us, you know, asking us to record the history of that community. We've got a veterans. We're working on a veterans
memorial kind of
memorial type thing, you know, to capture their information. So it's really cool. And it's such a joy and truly a privilege to be a part of those. That's where I get teary eyed. Yeah.
Every single one.
Every single one. All right. Well, the year is 2000. When it turned from 1999 to 2000, the world's technology did not implode.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. Pretty sure. The Sims.
Seems like a simulation sometime.
The Sims, you know, the game, was released in North America for the first time. Inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that year, Eric Clapton, Earth, Wind & Fire, My Girl Bonnie Raitt, James Taylor, Nat King Cole, Billie Holiday. It's like some of those classics, right?
Sure.
This was the year, and we talked about it more than I think I ever would have thought. We talk about Napster on this podcast a lot.
Well, it's a big moment. We all remember, most of us remember Napster in that time. It was huge.
This was the year that Metallica filed their lawsuit against Napster.
Mostly Lars, but okay.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I get it. You want to be paid. He was kind of a jerk about it, though, and I really was not a fan of him. Anyway, accurate GPS access was no longer limited to just the U.S. military.
That's a big moment.
And I don't know if you guys remember, but it was like the sky is falling kind of moment. Like, oh my gosh, what are these people going to do with this GPS information? And now I feel like I can't walk around my neighborhood without GPS. It's like,
and look at us now.
Yeah.
Can't walk around the block without a GPS anymore.
Which way am I supposed to go? I have no idea. Yeah. The musical Cats closed after 7,485 performances.
That's a lot. I hope we do that many.
That was, and then they went into that horrendous movie like a few years ago. That was really bad.
You shouldn't even have brought it up.
I shouldn't have. Yeah. Curb Your Enthusiasm debuted on HBO.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I'm going to shit talk some sports fans in here, and I'm really sorry ahead of time. Bill Belichick began his reign as a spawn of Satan at the New England Patriots.
Darth Hoodie, as I like to call him.
Can't stand that guy. He had an empire, though. He had an empire.
He built a dynasty.
He did. Mark Cuban bought the majority stake in the Dallas Mavericks from Ross Perot. I did not know that Ross Perot owned that. Crazy. This is for you, J-Dog. Dan Marino played his last game.
Yeah. See you later, Dan. Yeah. It was a tough last game, too. It was really bad.
And they retired number 13 that year, too.
Good.
Mm-hmm. The first MLB game was played in Enron Park, which, of course, we know did not age well. It's now called Minute Maid Park. In Super Bowl 34, the St. Louis Rams beat the Tennessee Titans. They've not been able to say that since. Neither team has said that. Tiger Woods won his first U.S. Open. The LA Lakers beat the Indiana Pacers in the NBA Finals. And it's probably no surprise here, but Shaq probably did not make a free throw that game. Thank you. Thanks. That got a chuckle, and I was not expecting that. I appreciate that.
We needed that.
This, tiny 5'2" me making fun of a 7-foot-tall Shaq. I mean, he could squash me with one step, but I'll still.
Who do you guys think could make more free throws, Shaq or Don Palumbo? Who are you betting on?
You guys are too kind. I'm not so sure about that.
A lot of Don voters. She could beat him on the hockey rink. Okay.
I could do.
Yeah.
That I could do. Yeah.
Slap shots. She's got them. Free throws. Maybe not.
Let's not get carried away. Yeah. In the World Series, the best team money can buy, the New York Yankees, beat the New York Mets. Derek Jeter was the MVP. I heard a vomit sound. Thank you. I appreciate it. As a Red Sox fan, I do like Derek Jeter, but I really hate the Yankees. I hate the Yankees. And of course, we would not be able to talk about the year 2000 without talking about the presidential election and blame it on Florida, the hanging chads.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. It was eventually resolved by the U.S. Supreme Court, George W. won.
Yeah, of course. And I just want to go back and say I like Minute Maid way more than Enron anyways. So
I think if someone said they liked Enron more than Minute Maid, that would be weird. That'd be really weird. That'd be really weird. All right. Well, tonight's case, we go to the Black Hills, Spearfish, South Dakota, to be exact. Spearfish is nestled in the northern Black Hills. And I'd like to point out for those of you who maybe don't know, the Black Hills are in both South Dakota and North Dakota. Okay. We have Black Hills as well. It's the same thing. It's just two different national parks. I get very, I don't know, very territorial about something that is not even in my vicinity, but still. And of course, Spearfish is known for the outdoorsy things to do there. The hiking and biking trails, and of course, the fly fishing. Natural beauty galore.
Yeah, Spearfish Canyon is amazing.
It really is. Spearfish. It's one of my favorite places. If you've watched the 90s movie with Kevin Costner, Dances with Wolves, a portion of that film was filmed in Spearfish.
Okay, I'll pocket that for trivia later.
Yeah, you should. Mm-hmm. On March 16th, 2000, Dottie Pogue returned home to Spearfish from Florida vacation only to find her house had been burglarized. Her son Chester was missing, and so was his newer Chevy Blazer. She contacted the police because she was worried that Chester had been convinced by his friends to rob her. With no sign of where he could be, she filed a missing persons report. Chester Allen Pogue, 19, who preferred to go by his middle name, was very close with his mom, Dottie, and of course, and especially after his dad died by suicide in 1996. He was still reeling with some anger issues from that, and it just really brought them closer.
Sure.
He was relatively new to Spearfish. You know, the family had only lived there, both his mom and his sister, for a few months. And because of the money that his family had, it wasn't difficult for him to make friends. Unfortunately, it didn't always attract the right kind of friends.
Okay, so their family was wealthy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yep. On April 22nd, 2000, a woman who owned land near Higgins Gulch was turning around a horse trailer when something caught her eye in a creek not far away. So this is about a month and 10 days later. As she got closer, she realized it was a partially submerged, half-naked body. When law enforcement showed up on scene, indeed, there was a younger male laying partially submerged in a near-frozen creek. He was wearing nothing but a tank top type undershirt and shoes and socks. He had been badly beaten and his face was unrecognizable. Now, of course, law enforcement was tasked to find out who it actually was. After repeatedly running into dead ends, a deputy in Lawrence County came across a missing persons report that had been filed the month earlier. Unfortunately, the tattoos matched the ones found on the body, and this was Chester Pogue.
Okay, and Higgins Gulch is how? Do you know how far that is from Spearfish?
About a 10-minute drive.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that actually. So shortly before his death, Chester started hanging with Briley Piper, and Briley had two other roommates equally as troubled as he was: Elijah Page and Daryl Hoadley. All kind of found themselves
troubled. What do you mean by troubled?
They basically all lived together in a flop house.
Okay.
It was their place.
They party a lot.
They partied. They came from shitty households. They just wait.
Okay.
We'll get there. Piper, who was 19, was somewhat of the leader and had moved here from Alaska. Paige was the 18-year-old and the other transplant who had been in and out of foster homes all his life, just looking for a place to be accepted. And Hoadley, the shortest and oldest of the group at 20, was more of a follower who was from the Spearfish area. Paige, Piper, and Hoadley had known each other for about a year and had already caught the attention of local law enforcement for suspicions of dealing LSD.
Oh.
While Chester wasn't connected to that crowd, he had started to party with the trio a little bit. But he wasn't really into the drug scene.
The trio being Elijah,
yeah,
Daryl,
Paige, Piper, and Hoadley.
Piper. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. So it was likely a situation of a quiet, less popular person trying to fit in and then being taken advantage of by those three people who had little compassion for anyone and was always looking for their next opportunity to get money, regardless of how they got it.
Of course. And so if these are dependent drug users and they identify somebody looking to make friends, such as Chester, with access to money,
right,
it's really easy to turn that person into your little money machine. They feel accepted by you. They feel like they have somebody to hang out with. Mm-hmm. And really, you're just using them,
right,
to fund your parties and your scams and whatever, yeah, bullshit you're up to. I've actually had that happen to a friend of mine from high school.
Yeah, it's awful. It is, I mean, completely...
Mm.
Yeah. It seemed that the group was a bit jealous of Chester and the lifestyle that he was born into. It wasn't his choice. He was born into it. Piper had at one point been heard saying that he was going to make Chester, quote, his bitch. On March 12th, 2000, Chester Pogue, Elijah Page, Briley Piper, and Daryl Hoadley met up at approximately 8 p.m. After giving a friend of Piper's friend a ride, the rest of the group went to Chester's house to play games. While Chester
Video games.
Yep. While Chester and Hoadley, yeah, not Monopoly. That's yeah. Right. It was the year 2000.
Right.
I missed that word. Yeah. Yeah. Video games. I think that's an important distinction, right?
It matters.
I would invite people over to play Monopoly, but also...
Yeah,
I
you want to come over and play cribbage? Let's go. Yeah. You know, I'll play cards. I'm old
down.
School like
down.
That.
These guys were not. So they were playing video games. And while Chester and Hoadley played, the other two went snooping. Piper then asked Chester to show him his mother's gun collection, but Chester only knew the location of one of her guns, which was an antique .22 caliber pistol. Unbeknownst to Chester, he pocketed that gun. So when the three friends, which meaning Paige, Piper, and Hoadley...
And we're using the word friends pretty loosely here at this point.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to say colleagues. I don't think they were running a legit business or anything.
No, I know.
Yeah. They went outside to smoke a cigarette, and that is when Piper suggested to Paige and Hoadley that they should rob Chester's house. And from there, they hatched their plan.
Of course.
After a while, Paige, Piper, and Hoadley were able to convince Chester that they should leave. And then they were going to go to their house. The group of four piled into Chester's vehicle because, of course, none of them had one.
I was just, of course, he's the driver, too.
Mm-hmm. And it's a newer Chevy Blazer, right? It's loaded. Yeah. So they all pile into his vehicle and they went to the house where Paige, Piper, and Hoadley lived, which, again, was basically a flop house. What was supposed to be a night of just fun, easy partying turned into the opposite. When they got to the house, Paige pulled out the antique .22 caliber pistol that he stole from Chester's mom and made him get on the floor.
Oh, man.
When Chester asked why, Paige told him, quote, "We are jacking you of all your stuff." Then Piper kicked him in the head, knocking him unconscious. While Chester was unconscious, they tied him up with a cord and then sat him upright in a chair, laying a tire iron on his feet to prevent him from moving. When Chester came to, he started to cry and then pleaded with the group to let him leave, asking them why they were doing this. Paige hit him in the face and told him to, quote, "shut the fuck up." Then the torture began. Even though they claimed they didn't want to kill him, they forced him to drink a mixture of crushed pills, beer, and hydrochloric acid.
Oh, man.
Of course, they don't want to kill him, but they're going to, yeah. And for those of you that don't know exactly what that is, I didn't. I had to look it up. Hydrochloric acid is used to clean concrete or masonry, and in household use, it's in a lot of toilet bowl cleaners.
Did they have like hydrochloric acid in some beaker, or are they using like Drano or
that's part of it? That's what I'm wondering. Okay. It didn't say. It just said the hydrochloric acid.
So
documents weren't specific on what they used.
They used a chemical cleaner or some sort or something.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, they specifically said hydrochloric acid. So I wondered why force that concoction.
It's a fair question. They've already got him subdued. Mm-hmm. They don't need. I mean, unless they felt like they had to interrogate him or whatever. I don't know. They're just twisted. They're just freaks.
Well, I don't know.
And the pills. What kind of pills did they crush up? Is this opiates? Is this
court documents did not say?
Okay,
yeah,
so just it was just a mixture of pills. Mm-hmm. It could have been Adderalls. This could have been opiates.
Could have been anything.
It's what 2000. Yeah. You said the year 2000.
Yeah, Adderall
so
was.
I mean that Adderalls was kind of the mm-hmm. uppers were a bit more. You know, the opiates were just coming onto the scene. But regardless.
Yeah. Yeah, I would if I had to speculate, you know, just being in high school at that time, you could buy some Adderall for it was expensive.
You're not trying to.
I never did though.
Quote,
I was prescribed them.
Yeah, good. Yeah. You're not trying to quote kill him, but you're forcing this kid to drink poison now.
Yeah, and so he had to have been ill and throwing up, but
in the shock and pain and sadness that Chester had to have felt in that moment of betrayal, like he's just having a good time with these people that he thought were his friends. I doubt he saw this coming.
I don't think there's any way he saw it coming.
It is just so vile already.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's going to get worse. You guys, this one's a doozy.
It always gets worse. Yeah.
In an effort to scare Chester, they openly talked about killing him in front of him. Paige demanded his ATM pin, and of course, Chester willingly complied. I would have too. Then the trio threatened to slit his throat, but said they changed their minds because it would be too messy, too much blood in the house. They said they'd do it somewhere else. But again, they maintained. the entire time that they weren't going to kill him.
They just wanted to rob the place, they said.
Then just go rob the place. Yeah. They forced Chester again into his own vehicle, threatening to kill him if he tried to escape. Piper got in the driver's seat. The other two followed suit. Between 11:30 and midnight, Piper drove the group about 7 miles away to a secluded wooded area known as Higgins Gulch. They pulled Chester out of the vehicle and forced him to walk downhill through nearly a foot of snow towards a small icy creek, which was only approximately 50 feet from the road. Mind you, the temperature is about 25 degrees at this point. Paige and Piper forced Chester to undress, assisting him since he was still restrained, and they left him wearing just his undershirt and his socks and shoes. Grabbing his pants, Paige took his wallet. Near the creek, Chester was ordered to lay down in the deep snow, hoping their victim would freeze to death. Then they covered his body with snow, kicking it over the top of him. At that point, Chester got up and started to run away, but he was no match for Paige, who caught up with him right away and pushed him into the nearly frozen creek. Growing increasingly agitated, they kicked him repeatedly in the head. Chester cried and pleaded, quote, "I'm not going to run. I'm not going to run." And that is when the group claimed it was time to kill him.
The group claimed.
The three, yeah.
Just a unanimous choice. Okay.
Yeah. And up until this point, they claimed later that they did not go out there with the intention of killing him, which, I mean...
Bullshit.
It is. It's like, okay, dude.
You don't march somebody into the dark, into the cold like that without...
Right.
Murderous intentions.
Like, make him half naked? Like, what are you doing? But it doesn't make sense. Obviously, not going to trust what they say. So Paige stabbed Chester first while he was in the cold water of the creek. Then Paige pulled Chester's head into his arms, causing Chester to ask, quote, "What are you doing?" Paige told him, "Just sit there." Paige plunged the knife into his neck as far as it would go. Piper then stabbed Chester in his head. The entire time, Piper laughed and joked about how much pain Chester was in, saying, quote, "Oh, like that would suck," and, "Ah, that's gotta hurt." Paige just chuckled. Of course, Hoadley was not innocent in this either. He also stabbed Chester, but mainly held a light while Paige kicked him.
Was this, do you know, the same knife being passed around between these sickos, or did they each have their own knife?
It was the same knife. Which they did find in the
gulch. I don't know if that makes it more or less disgusting to me. Probably a little bit more because you're taking the time to pass this around and do these terrible things.
Like the slow pace that this was moving in is just torturous.
No, it's not quick at all. It's chilling. And
we'll find out how long it took. Severely wounded and bleeding profusely and surprisingly still alive, Chester asked to warm up in his vehicle, saying that he would rather bleed to death while warm than die in the cold. Piper told him he'd let him warm up if he washed the blood off himself first. While Chester rinsed himself off in the ice-cold water, the other three just sat there and watched. When Chester was finished, he began to crawl toward his vehicle. I want to point out that the wound in his skull, the knife went all the way through. Which has to, that was caused by a lot of force. And this poor guy is still alive.
Still just wants to live.
Mm-hmm. So Paige, at that point, dragged Chester back to the creek and told him he wasn't allowed to go to his vehicle. Chester said to Paige that Piper had promised him. Paige said, quote, "Well, Piper's a liar. I'm a liar too. And I'm sure Daryl's a liar." Then Dum Dum Daryl piped up and said, quote, "Yeah, I'm a liar too." Paige used his foot to push Chester back into the water. Paige later said, quote, "He was basically just laying there, crying, still holding his throat and still holding his head." So then they tried to drown him. And that didn't work because he was still conscious. They were frustrated. And according to Paige, I mean, they all three of them were, because they thought that Chester was being too loud. I mean, the guy is dying slowly. And they're annoyed. So after telling him to shut the fuck up again, Paige kicked him once again, and then the other two joined in. One of them kicked him so hard, his ears detached. Somehow, after the stab wounds, the beatings, and the drowning, Chester was still alive. Chester kept pleading, quote, "Just let me die. Just let me die." Paige then looked at Daryl and said, quote, "My foot hurts, man. I can't kick him anymore." That's how much they kicked him.
I'm just so stunned by how horrific this is in the transformation of poor Chester trying to crawl his way back to living and then getting to a point where he just wants to give up. It is so sad.
Yeah. Piper at that time then went to warm up in Chester's vehicle.
Yeah, let me go warm up while you die.
Let me go warm up while you two buffoons continue to beat him, however. And it goes to show that he was the leader, the mastermind, it seemed. Because they seemed to listen to what he said, and
Well, and I know.
And of course, you can't believe anything either the three of them would say.
No,
but.
Of course not. And I know you mentioned they concocted this plan to rob Chester that night, but I just have the feeling this is something they discussed. That mm-hmm. you know, these three friends were closer and had a long history and were clearly terrible people to start with. They didn't become terrible people after they met Chester. And he was, of course, the odd person out.
I want to come back to that because there's some observations that people made with, about that.
You know, how premeditated it was. I can only, you know, I don't know, but this feels to me like those three in the interior group probably talked about doing something like this or similar before that night. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to think they just made this decision that night and that's where they were going to bring him and all of that. It's a lot of things that happened there. How long did they have him at the house before they brought him somewhere?
This is all the same night.
Okay. Yep. They didn't keep him at the house for days and then make this decision. There's no plans of making him a hostage or anything mm-mm. like that. They said they're going to rob his house, but they were never just going to rob his house.
I think that's maybe how it started. And then that evening it just got carried away.
And then one of them was a little, you know, effed up on whatever mm-hmm. alcohol and
whatever
drugs
else they were on, whatever. Yeah.
And the sadistic internal existence that was dying to get out of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like I think they had always set out to rob him. It wasn't a true friendship by any means. I don't think when they met him, they set out to kill him.
No. I wouldn't predict that either. I think when they met him, they set out to use him.
Sure.
100%. Yeah. They set out to use him. But mm-hmm. at some point, I feel like almost prior to that night, late at night, they're hanging out, you know? What if we robbed Chester? What if we killed him? Mm-hmm. You ever wonder what it was like to stab somebody? You know, these weird questions that people like that wonder to each other.
Yeah. And you probably also think, you know, they're maybe panicking too. Like if we rob him, are they going to know
what's going to happen?
You know, what's going to happen? Are they going to find us?
Oh, we've kidnapped them. If we let him go, mm-hmm. It's only going to get worse for us.
Right.
But this is torturous. This is deeper than murder. It's torture. Mm-hmm. It's different. Torture is
much. That's another level.
It is. It's such another level.
And this was, so just to reiterate the time frame, they met at 8, right? They met up at 8, went and played video games, and at 11, like between 11:30 and midnight is when they drove out to Higgins Gulch.
Jesus, that is
quick.
That's
a short time frame.
That is a rapid escalation to go from, we went from video games to torture in 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. 4 hours at most.
It's sick.
Yeah. So with Piper warming up in Chester's vehicle, not his own, I'd like to point out again, they looked around for another way that they could kill Chester. They tried everything they had. At one point, they knew that the gun was not loaded. They didn't have any ammo for it, but they still threatened him with it at one point.
What use is the threat with the gun at this point? What are you threatening him with? You've already done everything.
Right. So the two, Paige and Hoadley, they looked around, of course, and they found rocks close to the size of a basketball. They threw it on him. Chester screamed, ow, and was still conscious. Paige and Hoadley then went to the car to talk to Piper. Paige later said, quote, me and Daryl were like, hey, man, he's not dying. We just hit him over the head with a whole bunch of rocks, and he's still moaning and groaning and stuff. Piper said, well, I don't care. Finish it. Make sure he's dead.
Piper, again, the boss, right? The leader. And these guys are his cronies now reporting to him, and he's reissuing his orders.
Yeah. And just the lack of compassion. Obviously, if you're going to murder someone in this fashion, you likely don't have a lot anyway, but he's not even a human being to them at this point. So Paige and Hoadley then went back to Chester. They found two or three more rocks so large it took the two of them to lift them. After the second or third one, Chester was then dead. After being there for nearly 4 hours, they left between 3 and 4.
They spent more time killing this poor kid than they did playing video games with him.
That night, yeah. Using Chester's vehicle, the three drove to Chester's house, where they stole absolutely everything they could fit into the Chevy Blazer. Deciding to lay low and get out of town, they made plans to drive to see Paige's sister in Hannibal, Missouri, which is over 12 hours away from Spearfish. It's a trek.
And they drove the stolen vehicle then?
Uh-huh, yeah. Okay. So they stopped in Cheyenne, Wyoming to pawn some of the items that they stole from the Pogue house and then drove the rest of the way to Missouri. But they would not be there for long. So these guys are also not smart. Which, I mean, obviously. They visited with Paige's sister for a little while and then asked if they could stay there. And she told them that they could not stay with her. So they drove back to South Dakota.
Was she aware of what they
Absolutely
did?
Absolutely not. Nope.
Okay.
She was not aware.
Not aware of stolen vehicle, aware of anything, but probably aware that you guys
they were
are
shit
trouble.
Bags. Yeah.
Shit bags. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolute piece of shit scumbags.
So they just drove 12 hours back to Spearfish.
Wow.
Along the way, they pawned more of the property from the Pogue house and then also took cash out of Chester's account using his ATM card and the PIN that he had given Paige earlier.
Is it weird that their stupidity makes me even more disgusted with them?
No, I don't think so.
Okay,
I don't think so. Yeah.
Just when I didn't think I could get any more disgusted with these people, then they do all this extra stupid shit, and it's like you're even sinking lower.
And I don't know what would be worse, if they were smart masterminds or if they were, dumb criminals. I don't know. Yeah. So when they got back to South Dakota, they said they'd never talk about it ever again. And then each eventually went their own separate ways, within a couple of weeks. Hoadley, of course, stayed in Spearfish. Piper went back home to Alaska, and Paige, driving Chester's Blazer, drove to Missouri to see his sister again, and then continued to Allen, Texas, where his father lived.
And did they accomplish all this then while Chester's mom is in Florida? She has
because
not returned.
She wasn't back until until March 16th.
Okay,
yep.
So during this whole time, mm-hmm. when they're gallivanting around the country, pawning the mm-hmm. stuff and mm-hmm. driving the stolen vehicle, she doesn't even know her son's missing yet.
Right.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay.
So on April 25th, of course, 2000, about 5 days after Chester Pogue's body was found, which is also the same day that stolen Chevy Blazer was spotted in Texas, Danny Burkhart contacted law enforcement with information about the murder. Daryl Hoadley, who had remained in Spearfish, of course, was all but bragging to his coworker, Danny, while at work. They were construction workers, and he was bragging to him that he was involved with the murder of the guy that had just been found at Higgins Gulch.
Who the fuck brags about this?
I know. So
I get when you do it when you're in jail, You want to be a tough guy in jail? But
yeah. And Danny is like, dude, what?
you're freaking me out.
Yeah. So of course he reaches out to law enforcement then. When Danny told detectives the story, they asked him if he'd be willing to wear a recording device. He agreed.
Wow, what a legend.
When Danny asked Hoadley more about the story while wearing the wire, Hoadley admitted numerous times that he had been involved and also gave multiple details that only someone truly involved would know.
This is just chilling.
Mm-hmm. So investigators had more information than they needed to interview Hoadley. They knew it all. When the interview first started, Hoadley pretended not to know much, but of course, detectives were quick to tell him that they had him.
They didn't let his game go on too long.
No. They're like, don't be too dumb here.
Don't be naive. We got you.
So he gave a detailed statement about his involvement and, of course, his two buddies as well.
And, you know, of course, being the first one to talk to police, you get to tell the first version. You get to tell the first version, and you can make yourself be all these scumbags. They think they can, I'm going to tell the story. I'll be the least guilty one. They're going to go soft on me. I'm going to be the least guilty. They're going to get my version.
It's probably the smartest thing he did.
Right. It's the first moment he's had a brain in the whole story.
And there was speculation that he wanted a romantic relationship with Piper.
Oh.
So he was willing to do anything for this guy.
Wow.
But that's just speculation. It's not, you know, there's nothing been concrete about that. So he also agreed to accompany detectives to the crime scene in Higgins Gulch and then continued to answer questions there. So at that point, they have the story. Warrants were issued for Piper and Page as well, and the nationwide search began. But of course, it would not take long to find them. Because, of course, they knew they had to go to Texas because they'd spotted that the blazer there.
The blazer, sure.
And just 3 days later...
Said the other guy was in Alaska.
Mm-hmm. But also, Hoadley knew those things, too. He knew where they were from. So 3 days later, 3 days after the warrants were issued and they had spoken to Hoadley, Page was arrested in Texas. And he confessed immediately. He was then extradited to the jail in Lawrence County in South Dakota. Almost simultaneously that Page was arrested, Piper was located in Alaska and also confessed immediately. So these guys are tough guys, you know, up until they get in front of some cops and they're like, oh yeah, I totally did it. Sorry. You know, like not saying that they should be tough guys, but it's just, it just shows like how, I don't know, it just makes them worse.
I don't know
it
that they're tough guys. They're deviants, you know, they're freaking little weirdos. And
so he too, of course, was extradited to the jail in Lawrence County, in South Dakota. So once back in South Dakota, Page, who had already confessed, he offered to accompany investigators also to Higgins Gulch, where he recorded a 48-minute videotaped confession. He took three of the detectives through a step-by-step explanation of the murder. While one hand was cuffed, he used his other hand and his feet to show them how he, Piper, and Hoadley, quote, taunted, kicked, stripped, stabbed, and stoned Polk. It's no secret, of course, that three people can't keep a secret, and it's always someone else's fault.
Of course.
Piper and Hoadley maintained that Page was the mastermind, and they only agreed to go along out of fear. Page disagreed and said, no, all three of us.
Of course, they all want a finger point. And, mm-hmm. and again, they're all admitting, I did it, but I didn't do it as bad as this guy.
And I find it interesting that Piper was the one to say that Page was the issue when he's the one that's like sitting like a king in the car just waiting for those two flunkies to come over to him.
Well, of course, and giving out the commands. But mm-hmm. you said that Hoadley was maybe had a thing for Piper. So of course Hoadley is going to be on quote unquote Piper's side.
Sure.
And, mm-hmm. and so the two of them are going to team up on Page and try to pin whatever they can on him. They're all just as guilty. Mm-hmm. Trying to pin it on one of the three is not going to save you. He's not going to save you at this point.
And sorry, little buddy, just holding the flashlight does not make you any less guilty.
Of course not. And really props to law enforcement here on the expeditious acquisition of the other two who were on the lam. Like, that's a really quick and efficient, it especially up in Alaska. Right. I was like, up in Alaska?
And
it just seems so far and big, and it's a frontier, and like hiding in Alaska seems really easy.
I'm watching True Detective, the latest season of True Detective.
Me too.
And I feel, I'm obsessed. And I was like,
Very
obsessed. So that's exactly what I thought of. I'm like, yeah, you could totally hide there. He probably thought he would.
Yeah.
But the interesting part is the South Dakota detectives were the ones that caught up with him. They didn't send anybody else to do it. It wasn't local law enforcement.
Oh, wow.
They're the ones that traveled there.
They went up there to get him. They didn't use the FBI or
they went.
Wow. Even,
yeah.
Well, that's
they
even
went,
more impressive. Yeah. Good for them.
Yep. So when court came around, Hoadley pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity.
Of course.
I mean, you gotta just go for it, I guess. Shoot your shot, buddy. He was tried by jury in Rapid City, South Dakota in May 2001.
Which is important to point out. So they moved the venue then? Because that was in Spearfish?
They moved it in Rapid City. Yeah, I think it was just the closest place that could handle it. Yeah. The prosecutor pursued the death penalty for this. This prosecutor, he gave no shits. He's like, nope, everybody's gonna pay for this. And hearing him talk about this case was absolutely incredible. I respect the guy for the way he handled this. From what I have seen, it's incredible.
I mean, I'm pretty worked up, so I'm glad he was too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he absolutely was. When the jury couldn't reach a unanimous decision on the death penalty, he was convicted of first-degree murder, kidnapping, first-degree robbery, first-degree burglary, and grand theft. And he was given, he was sentenced to life in prison without parole for the murder conviction, life without parole for kidnapping, 25 years for first-degree robbery and first-degree burglary, and then 10 years for grand theft. All sentences to run consecutively.
Good.
So that is like sentence after sentence. It's not concurrently, right? It's not, they're not running together at the same time.
Just in case that without parole thing gets some sort of tweak or doesn't work or whatever. No, like it's okay.
Yeah. So but the jury was the one to decide, and they could not come up with a unanimous decision as far as the death penalty went. Page and Piper took a different approach in an effort to hopefully avoid the death penalty because they see what's coming. He was the first one to get tried. They both pleaded guilty. The prosecutor was like, cool, thanks. He did not care. Page
still went for the death penalty on them.
Uh-huh, yeah. Page pleaded guilty to first-degree felony murder, kidnapping, first-degree robbery, first-degree burglary, and grand theft. There was absolutely no plea agreement made. And the prosecutor pursued the death penalty. In an uncommon move, he waived his rights to sentencing by jury and instead opted for sentencing by the circuit court.
Okay. And to be clear, that means he wanted the judge to decide his fate versus a jury of 12 of his peers. Okay. Because that doesn't happen often. I don't even know that we've encountered Midwest Murder to this point.
Back, yeah.
I don't think we have.
No. After a 5-day sentencing hearing, the circuit court sentenced Page to death by lethal injection because of the following factors. Quote, and this is pulled right from the court documents, defendant committed the offense for the benefit of the defendant or another for the purpose of receiving money or any other item of monetary value. Next, quote, the offense was outrageously or vile, horrible, or inhuman, in that it involved torture, depravity of mind, and an aggravated battery to the victim. And third, quote, the offense was committed for the purpose of avoiding, interfering with, or preventing lawful arrest or custody in a place of lawful confinement of the defendant or another.
Good enough for me.
Mm-hmm. So they let him have it. One thing that I found interesting when they, during the sentencing hearing, you know, of course they've got all kinds of witnesses and all of that.
Were there other people that sort of attested to the fact that these guys had vile plans on Chester? Did anybody?
Not as far as plans go. Not that I came across.
Nobody, no other witnesses that you encountered had come forward and said these dudes were conspiring before that night.
No.
Okay.
No. So family and friends said that Paige had been severely abused as a child. And of course, right? So, but the violence that he showed Chester was uncharacteristic. And then a counselor gets up there and says that Paige identified as a, quote, budding sociopath all the way back to 1997. So
what?
His family and friends are like, oh no, he's such a good guy. He's had a hard life. This is so uncharacteristic. And the counselor's like, no, that is not true at all.
So, this is a counselor who interviewed or was like a regular person that he talked to.
All the way back to 1997. So I shouldn't say all the way back. That was just 3 years prior, but yeah.
To 1997.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it is so scary because it's okay. You told me you're a budding sociopath, which means you're sort of admitting to thoughts that maybe you want to do murder at some point. Yeah. If somebody says, you know, I've thought about being a sociopath once in a while.
I don't think he was like, I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking I'm going to become one. He had those characteristics.
Right.
So they were starting to shine through all the way back to that point. So Piper pleaded guilty to first degree felony murder, kidnapping, robbery in the first degree, burglary in the first degree, and grand theft. Not surprisingly, the prosecutor pursued the death penalty there as well. Judge Warren G. Johnson sentenced him to death.
Big fan of this prosecutor.
When all three had been sentenced, Lawrence County Prosecutor John Fitzgerald said, quote, Chester Allen Pogue was put through hell. Then his suffering was made into a joke. When Detective Brian Bean interviewed the three for the drug suspicion, he didn't have them pegged for the violence that they showed. So when he interviewed them, he's like, he was surprised that it was them. He doesn't think any of them would have done the murder on their own, saying, quote, they began to feed off of each other. No one had the courage to stop. The combination of those people on that night was absolutely explosive. Three people who never should have gotten together got together, and a whole lot of evil was the result.
And I can't help but wonder how spun out they all were in the partying. And again, we've all partied a bunch and never killed anybody. I get it. But at some point, if you're doing too many things at the same time, especially pills, it breaks your mind in a way. There's a different snap that can occur. And, you know, I can't help but wonder about that. If they smashed up a bunch of pills and gave them to him, number one, sadly, I think that's why he was able to endure so much.
I know.
That's why he was able to endure so much, is because of that psychotic cocktail they gave the poor kid, Chester. But also, it's, to me, contributes to what allowed their minds to snap in such a synchronized way. He's almost saying mob mentality.
Right. And we don't know that they took pills. We don't know what they were on. I mean, we don't.
Yeah. But if they're in that lifestyle, they were feeding him that stuff.
It's not a far reach.
Right.
Yeah. About her son, Dottie Pogue said, quote, my son wasn't perfect and he made a bad choice thinking these kids were his friends. Chester was described by those who knew him as caring, someone who loved movies, going to church, and spending any time he could with family. He was taken advantage of, and wow, that was aggressive.
Sorry.
It was something. He was taken advantage of, and
it's for emphasis.
And he lost his life. So all three of those jokers pursued appeals. For Hoadley, his sentence was not changed, and his appeal was denied. After numerous appeals had been denied for Page, he eventually accepted his fate with lethal injection. On August 28th, 2006, hours before the execution, South Dakota Governor Mike Rounds issued a last-minute stay of execution, saying that state law did not match the execution procedure. And so at that point, it's like, oh, man. But on February 23rd, 2007, Governor Rounds signed legislation revising the death penalty law.
Oh, boy.
And so he's like, mic drop, proceed. Yeah. Like,
don't worry, I got you.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I got you. Next session, it's coming. Yeah. Give it one more legislative session. We can fix this.
We'll figure this out. Yeah. Elijah Page was put to death by lethal injection in July 2007. Page was the first execution in the state of South Dakota since 1947.
God, man, that is just chilling. And it's strange because in so many other times when we've seen the death penalty issued like this, it takes a long time for that to be executed, for lack of a better word.
I choose a different word there, but yeah.
Well, I mean, you already used execution. Yeah. I mean, you know, we've seen this take 10, 15, 20 years sometimes for someone to finally get that moment.
And there are some that are on death row forever.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
We're talking about, this is like a 5 or 6 year turnaround. South Dakota wasn't fucking around when it came to this.
And I don't think they do regularly because this is not the first execution case that I have personally covered in South Dakota. It was the other one. It was the It Is Done.
Oddly enough, this makes three execution cases that we've covered in South Dakota because Daphne Wright was the first woman executed in South Dakota. I can't remember, maybe ever or in a very long time. Sure. That was, of course, an episode that we covered, I don't know, episode 20 or something like that. Back then. Anyways,
Wow. All right, well, let's get out of South Dakota. No offense, you guys, but I'm not sure I'm going to go there for a little while. I'm kidding.
I love the Black Hills.
I love South Dakota. But it is better on top.
North Dakota represent.
Yeah. things were different for Briley Piper. The South Dakota Supreme Court eventually overturned his death sentence, saying a jury should decide whether he is sentenced to death or not.
Wow.
Just wait. In 2011, that jury was like, oh, we agree. Unanimously sentenced him to death.
Which good for the jury, sort of. I hate to celebrate such a thing, but it is so weird that they overruled his own choice.
The Supreme Court?
Yeah, he's the one who chose to have a judge determine whether or not he wanted to be executed.
Yeah.
That was his choice to have a judge determine. He said, no, I don't want a jury to make the choice. I want a judge to make the choice.
Yeah.
To me, and this then appealed is it crazy like a little bitch. That, yeah, that like, even this in this scenario, nuts. Yeah, he appealed it like a little bitch, but even in this scenario, somebody's like, well, you know what? Actually, you shouldn't have the right to decide whether a judge or a jury decides that. And second thought. So even in deciding who decides your death, we want to tell people how their decisions should be made as a government. That's just mind blowing to me. That's a whole other thing altogether.
After his new sentence was handed down to him, his attorney claimed Piper had taken responsibility for his actions. Jonah, guess who made appearance for him in prison?
I'm Jailhouse Jesus.
You betcha.
Of course.
He'd been baptized and was pursuing his college degree. His attorney said, quote, he's actually trying to do something with himself. Briley wants to live.
Yeah. You know what? Chester wanted to live too. And he wanted some friends.
Yeah. I struggle with the death penalty because we've gotten it wrong so many times.
Yes.
And so I do struggle with it.
And we've learned it's wrong in the final hour.
Right. But when you know, and you can't, there's nothing tangible there. So obviously you can't write policy or laws on it. You just feel it, which that doesn't go very far in a court of law, but I don't know. This whole situation was so vile and disgusting. And that poor guy lost his life at 19. So sources
to his friends,
who he thought were his friends.
Yeah, and that, you know, everybody wants a social group. People want to fit in. People want friends, and it is so tragic. Not just when somebody can't find a social group, but even more so when they find themselves in the wrong one. And
terribly sad. Sources for today on thisday.com for the timeline, court documents. The majority of this came from court documents and then Rapid City Journal, articles by Bill Harlan, Kevin Wester, Katie Brown, and Heidi Bell Geese. Of course, check out our merch.
And Bill Harla.
Harlan is the same guy. Thanks for calling me out on
there
my
twice, and I was like, wait, I didn't want you to miss anybody.
Thank you. I appreciate that. No, I
wasn't a call out. I just
missed an N. That's all. Yeah. Be sure to buy merch. Check it out. It's toomanyshirts.com/Midwest-murder. This episode was written by myself, Don Palumbo, and Midwest Murder is hosted by Don Palumbo and Jonah Lanto. I forgot your name for a second. I'm sorry.
I'm the guy.
They're the guy. And it is produced by the Good Talk Network. So
we'll answer as many questions as you guys have. We love the Q&A portion, so please do submit those.
Yeah, for sure.
Tioga, man, we really appreciate you guys for coming
out
tonight.
Thank you guys. Let's get into this Q&A.